more Notre Dame home games Saturday continues with WSBT Game Day, live from Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Here is your host, Evan Sharpley.
And we're back. It's the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. The Fighting Irish took care of business last weekend in South Bend with a blowout win over the North Carolina State Wolfpack. Notre Dame continues with this single elimination tournament every week with the Wake Forest Demon Deacons in town today. The number 3 ranked Irish now kick off at 3:30 p.m. this afternoon. For the next hour, I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, your tour guide as we prep for kickoff. And if this is your first time tuning in to the show, this is all about setting the atmosphere, giving you a feel for the game day experience, and we'll talk with former Irish players and discuss X's and O's. Riding shotgun once again with me today is my producer, State Farm agent Tim Growl. And make sure, as part of this Irish game day experience, that you stop by our show at the Ivy Court Inn and Suites, meet the guests, get autographs and pictures with them, and enjoy some delicious Fisher's Tips and Chips barbecue. Tim, we're back. How you doing?
It's so hard to concentrate. I can just smell that barbecue right now. They just stuck a piece of sweet potato pie.
We're going to try it on air.
With Rob later on show and everything. But what a good day. Hey, it's not raining.
It's not
who
raining.
Who cares? We're ready with our offense and defense to have another great
game.
You
know, I would say, though, the atmosphere, and we've been on the porch here for the Georgia game, which was electric. We were on the porch for the USC game. And kind of since then, I would say the feel out here has – which is surprising. You've got the number 3 ranked team in the nation here in South Bend.
It is hard to believe when you drive in here. It's just like the, like I've said before, party in the Red Seas. There's nobody on the roads. There's nobody right out here. But
well, maybe it'll heat up before kick. What do you think?
I think it's going to heat up. And you know what better way to start? You know, we got such a rushing offense.
That's right.
Got a great tailback here.
Yeah, we've got
first guest.
The 1994 Cotton Bowl MVP Lee Becton. Lee, what's up, man? How are you?
I am fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Great. What have you seen so far from the Irish tailbacks this year? It's been pretty electric. Josh Adams, his Heisman campaign going, over 300 yards rushing as a team per game. It's got to be fun to watch, right?
This is awesome. This is what Notre Dame football is all about. You know, everybody likes to see the Irish when they're just running downhill and they're imposing their will with their offensive line. This is great. You know, we got a set of backs and from Josh on down that they're all pretty good. Josh is doing a fantastic job. You know, his vision and his acceleration is just it's something to marvel at when you're out watching the game.
And I want to get your opinion on this. You know, Josh is number one or top five in numerous categories, yet there doesn't seem to be the same buzz for him as there are Saquon Barkley at Penn State, Bryce Love at Stanford. There was a poll, and they had four Heisman candidates listed, and Adams was left off the list. Why? And I've tried to wrap my head around this. I don't get it. What is missing right now? You have a Heisman campaign that is 33 trucking is the campaign. Do you think it needs to be more about him? And in this type of I guess contest, if it were. It's a singular event, and you really have to market yourself.
Unfortunately, I have a little bit of a different take. A lot of this starts at the beginning of the season, and you know, a lot of the people that make their predictions of who's going to win the Heisman and all that stuff, if those players play marginal or just good enough, then they stay there. But then when you have a guy that is having a sensational season, it's really harder for that guy to crack in unless those other guys do something wrong.
Right.
So, you know, just like with the polls. Polls are great at the beginning of the season, but they don't mean nothing because you really should wait and see how teams are playing on the field. So I love the 33 trucking. I think it's awesome. Looking at his stats, looking at how he plays, looking at his impact on the game and Notre Dame, he to me is worth the Heisman. I just think that it's going to be a little difficult.
So it's right. There's it's almost like there's nothing he can do. Right? He just continues to play like he's playing, and it could be that he's on the outside looking in.
Here's the great thing that I see is that he's not into the hype. You know,
we learned yesterday he doesn't have Twitter.
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
He doesn't want to talk about himself.
No.
He sounds like me. I got an account, but I really don't use it. I, That's not my thing. But it's great to see a guy that's having this much success, but he's still all about the team, and that's, you know, that's what football is all about.
Tim Growl and Evan Sharpley from the porch of the Ivy Court Inn on WSBT's Game Day, and we're with Fighting Irish tailback Lee Becton, who has his own accolades. He rushed for 100 or more yards in 7 consecutive games in 1993. Man. And you average 5.8 yards per carry in your career. What I just heard a startling statistic today. And you were weaving and bobbing and all over the place. Let's go in that. What kind of drills did you work on? Because Josh has a lot of after-contact yardage, like 700 and some yards after contact, which is more than – a lot of running backs even have. What kind of drills did you, Lou, and the defense and run against you to get you to work on that?
I worked on all the drills that that helped me not get hit.
I like that.
That's smart.
My goal.
How are you feeling right now, right? Your body feel good?
You know, that was my goal. We did a lot of one-on-one tackling drills. We did a lot of individual preparation. And then we would get into schemes and stuff. But the majority of our practice was all about, you know, hey, what can we do for you to make you better from a technical standpoint? So, therefore, it would translate into the game. So, literally, we did a 3-cone tackling drill almost every week. And, when you got Bryant Young running at you, you're going to figure out how to
you're going
to
get a giddy up in your step, aren't you?
Yeah.
Notre Dame is ranked number 3 in the first college football playoff rankings. Georgia's number 1, Notre Dame's lone loss. Alabama number 2. And you're seeing Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma in the mix as well. Will it be enough if Notre Dame simply wins out the rest of the – I know rankings right now really don't mean a lot. It's still early, but, they're setting that base. How do you see it kind of playing out? Really what's happened over the last couple of years with the college football playoff is things have taken care of themselves,
right?
But there are some scenarios, and, of course, we that have all this extra time like to talk about it. And if a couple of those scenarios play out, you could have an undefeated Big Ten team with still a one-loss Big Ten team. Same thing could happen in the SEC. How do you see Notre Dame playing into that if they win out?
I think the great thing about I think the great thing about Notre Dame's schedule is the schedule says that we play one of the toughest and most challenging schedules in the country. And – if we went out, based on what has already been set, there's no way we go away.
Very close to the premise that you talked about with the Heisman. Yeah.
Once
you're in that top four early, you have to do a lot and look pretty terrible to get out of it.
That's what it's all about. But we have established ourselves in the top four. And for them to take us out, we would have to have a – one, if we lose, then we're out.
Right.
You know, but that's the great thing about Notre Dame is we don't play for a conference championship. We play for one thing, and that's the national championship. So these guys know that. If you've been watching them play, you can see it every time they step on the field. They're playing with a purpose, and it's great to see.
So Georgia, in my mind, really was the barometer for the season.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 1-point loss, very competitive for 4 quarters. Since then, it's been extremely dominating. What's been really one thing to kind of characterize this team since that Georgia game that you've seen?
So I think it's the play in the trenches. Against Georgia, granted that was early in the season, I don't think that we had gelled and really figured out our identity yet. We're a running team.
Mm-hmm.
We may do it from the shotgun, but we are a running team. And anybody that thinks anything different or anything like that, they're going to be in for a huge surprise. But our offensive line, and bigger than that, our defensive line sets the tempo for the game. If we can get pressure on opposing quarterbacks and not have to blitz, nobody can stop us. And our defensive front is playing lights out.
Lee, we know you're in a hurry. You're a busy guy. You're getting off to a signing. Tell us what you've got going on today so people can find you.
So, let's see. Got a signing over at Joyce. It's Purcell?
Purcell.
Yeah, Purcell. Here at 11:30. And then I get the pleasure of doing the post-game show with Mr. Reggie Brooks.
So, oh, man.
Oh, wow.
I'm excited
to be
back.
Pleasure? I don't know.
Yeah, so it's a busy day, but I love it. You know, there's nothing better than for me than to talk about Notre Dame football.
Well, we have to ask before you go, give us a prediction for today's game, and if you want to, give us a score.
Irish win. Irish by, let's see, score is going to be 35-7.
35? You're Woo! Loving this defense, aren't you? How about this turnaround, real quick?
Think about it. How many points have they given up?
Well, they haven't given up over 20 since.
Not a single game.
Since, only team
right,
in the country.
Correct.
Right. One rushing touchdown
one rushing
the whole
touchdown.
Season.
Think about that.
Pretty impressive.
I mean, seriously,
pretty impressive, right?
Yeah. All People, facets.
No one's talking about that, but our defense is what's making a difference.
Yeah.
Our turnover margin, incredible.
Points so off of turnovers.
Yeah.
So you're liking the Irish big today.
I like the Irish big today.
All right, Lee. Well,
hey, this is our kind of weather.
That's right. over under 40 rushes.
those guys from North Carolina, which I'm a North Carolina guy, you know, I'm from North Carolina, we're not ready for this.
Awesome, Lee. Well, thank you so much. Take
thank
care. Have a great day.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This is WSBT's Game Day, live from the porch of the Ivy Court Inn and Suites. To get a reservation for your out-of-town guests or to book your own getaway, call Ivy Court at 574-277-6500. We'll be right back with more football talk on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
May I have your attention, please? This is Tim McCarthy for the Indiana State Police. You are listening to WSBT, your radio home for Notre Dame football.
The Game Day Show is also brought to you by Budweiser and United Beverage, Carmella's at McCree's, Creative Colors International, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Hearth and Home.
Tim Growl, Evan Sharpley on Game Day, and I just love introducing guests when I just have this long list of things. Our next guest is a former 1969 Notre Dame team captain. He was a member of the Kansas City Chiefs for 4 years. He's an author of numerous books and articles in football and sports. And, oh, by the way, he was an associate dean of college liberal arts at Oregon State University. Oh, and I forgot, too. Last night he was honored at the Newt Rockne Memorial Society, and that would be Mike Oriard. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Nice to be with you, Tim. Evan.
Thanks for being here. Talk to us a little bit about the Newt Rockne Memorial Society, the event that you were at last night, and how that went.
Well, it's organized by this group that's trying to commemorate the legacy of Newt Rockne, and this is our first banquet. And I just learned last night, originally the intention had been to honor ERA, and the guys up there like myself who got the awards had been ERA's players, and so it was, you know, honoring the legacy of Newt Rockne, but also honoring the legacy of ERA Parseghian. There are no two coaches in the history of American football more deserving.
We've had a player on from Coach Parseghian's teams every week on this show, and it's been awesome to hear the stories. I don't know if one comes to mind or one resonates right off the top of your head that you could tell us, but we'd appreciate, you know, any insight or any, you know, any recollection that would kind of encapsulate, if you could, what Coach's legacy was.
Well, you know, my experience was a little different from the norm because I was a walk-on, and a walk-on who became captain. So that alone kind of says it was a fairy tale experience. And Ara Parseghian is the guy who allowed that to happen. And he was a guy who cared about us as people. You know, I was a tall, skinny kid, didn't look much like a football player, started out as a defensive end, 6'5", 205. You know, put on a few pounds, and they needed a body at center, and they moved me to center, and it worked out for me. And for me, Ara was just this kind of almost godlike figure that, I had a good relationship with my own father, but he was another father figure, somebody I just really wanted to please. I wanted him to be proud of me. I wanted him to feel right about having given me a shot to play. He was a great man as well as a great coach. And, you know, ultimately, that's more important.
Mike, you mentioned the godlike figure, and kind of a running question we ask each week is, Coach Parseghian was up in the almost the booth, or I think it was called the pulpit.
The
voice of God coming down, and we have to ask every player that's been on here, did you ever get called out, and what was that experience like? Was it good or bad?
Well, I did not get called out.
All right. All right.
And maybe it's because I was a center. And even with that vantage point, I don't know if you can tell that well if the center blows it or not. But, yeah, I escaped that, yeah.
The being named the captain, you know, coming from the walk-on experience to being the leader of the team, what was that like, and what maybe were the some words of advice from Coach Parsegian as to, or did you pull any of his leadership style into how you were going to lead the guys around you?
Well, you know, the captaincy just kind of caught me by surprise, and you know, kind of remained a continuous surprise. I thought, you know, is this right? Is this the way it should be? You know, here I'd been trying to just be one of the guys for so long, and then I was supposedly the leader in the offensive huddle. And I don't think I was a particularly vocal leader. I mean, I didn't have this sense that this is my team now. You know, come on, guys. You know, you know I'm going to show you the way to do it. I felt like one of the team, and that was the coolest feeling. And you know, as a captain, you know, it was sort of more honorary than something that translated into my behavior on the field, I don't think.
This is WSBT's Game Day from the Ivy Court Inn. Speaking of being a center, a Fighting Irish center, you were a center for noted quarterbacks Terry Hanratty and Joe Theismann.
Obviously, who had the softest touch?
Yeah. I was going to get into the details about playing for them, but did you even know how good they were as a college player, or did you appreciate them more as you got out of college?
No, I knew I was playing with great quarterbacks. And I'll tell you a Joe story, a Theismann story. When they moved me to center from defensive end in the spring of my sophomore year, Joe was the backup to Hanratty. So he is the guy that I worked with in practice as they're teaching me the position. And, you know, this was back when the quarterbacks were under the center, you know, 98% of the time. We had what we called the shotgun, which was a direct snap. I don't even know if Notre Dame used that. I don't know if I ever did anything but a direct snap to Joe. The direct snap looks so simple. Quarterback puts his hands in there, and the center snaps in the ball. But if you don't get it just right, you know, things can go wrong. And Joe, I'm sure to this day, I haven't seen him in years, has bent fingers. and
way to go, Mike.
You know, and unfortunately, that top hand is his passing. I hope it was the left hand that I got.
Maybe that made him a good quarterback. Maybe you made him with those bent fingers, made him to be more accurate.
Actually, as we're thinking, I'm thinking I probably got his left hand. Okay.
That's all right, though.
I hope so.
You're talking to another quarterback here, so he understands that. So.
Well, Mike, Notre Dame is sitting right now number three ranked in the nation, and a lot of it on the offensive side has had to do with the success that this offensive line has had.
Yeah.
In my mind, I think they've gotten better, progressively gotten better as the season's gone on. And you look at where they started, you know, you had a two new guys starting at the right tackle position. You had some experience with Mike McGlinchey and Quentin Nelson, Sam Musser, Alex Bars had played right tackle the year before. So there's some experience there, but they've continued to gel. What is that relationship like on the offensive line, and especially you being kind of the middle or the catalyst that brings that group together? What's communication like? You know, what's it like when you guys are working in unison, you know, where everything's flowing really smooth?
Yeah, you know, offensive linemen are sort of the ugly ducklings of the football team. You know, they're you know, Washington Redskins called them the Hogs.
There you go.
Back in the
yeah.
You know, we get no love. You know, but you know, our sense that we get no love creates the camaraderie that offensive linemen feel. Now, you know, all position players. You know, I'm sure defensive linemen, linebackers, defensive backs, so on. Have this sense of bond, but I really do suspect that it might be stronger among offensive linemen, because you know, we know we're the grunts, we know that we're necessary, we know that if we don't do our job, nothing happens. We also know if we do it well, most likely nobody will know, more so in my era than today. I mean, today the television coverage is so astonishing. I mean, you know, I could have played the best game or the worst game, and my offensive line coach and I would probably be the only guys who knew it, right? Today, you know, an offensive lineman misses a block. You know, it's there in painful slow motion over and over and over again. But still, I'm sure these guys today, you know, even with all the greater light on them, have a sense of themselves as the guys in the trenches. I mean, I'm sure some of the feelings that we had, the most important and powerful ones, haven't changed much. So playing together, coming together, becoming a group, having a sense of each one's, not just strengths and weaknesses, but tendencies and so on. You know, that happens over time. You know, it's like a relationship. You know, you don't have instant relationships, you build them. And it's a particularly complicated relationship, I guess, for offensive linemen. And so time does help.
Tim Grahl and Evan Sharpley on WSBT's Game Day. We're with 1969 Fighting Irish team captain Mike Oriard. And I was talking in your introduction about being an author, too. And doing some prep work, I'm reading a lot of reviews and everything. Your End of Autumn book is considered by many to be the best book written by a former NFL player. What insights were you bringing into that book that people will say such nice things about that book? And you've written a lot of different things, but I want to start with that book, and then I have another book to ask you about.
Okay, well, you know, the End of Autumn was my football memoir, let's say, and it happened in a it was triggered by a tragic incident. My teammate in Kansas City, Jim Tyer, went home one night after a game at Arrowhead Stadium and shot his wife and shot himself, and it was just utterly stunning. You know, this is the least likely guy to do that, and I wrote an obituary to Jim that got published in the New York Times, and an editor at Doubleday saw it and contacted me, said, are you writing a book? And I wasn't, but of course I could, you know. But then I thought, wait a minute, I'm not O.J. Simpson, you know, I'm not Gale Sayers. My life, and then I realized, okay, so this is an ordinary player's experiences that a lot of people could relate to, and so that was the perspective I brought to it. And also, I mean, I was a writer, you know, and I was an English professor at Oregon State University at the time, and most NFL players' autobiographies, you know, are written by sports writers, and you know. The autobiography is as told to, you know, so-and-so. And so I was writing my own story out of my own experiences, you know, with this kind of shocking event triggering it. And the End of Autumn, you know, the title suggests that football comes to an end and there's life beyond football. And so that kind of elegiac tone as capturing a certain part of the football experience. So a lot of different things went into it, I think, that made the book a little different than others that had been written beforehand.
And then you wrote a book about concussions, and you've done probably a lot of research on that. Of course, I think Elizé Mack is in concussion protocol this week. So where do you see all this going with football in general, in pros and colleges with the concussions?
Yeah, well, let's start with Jim Tyer. At the time, I thought the tragic story of the former athlete who was once a hero and now, you know, felt his life just didn't measure up. Now I'm pretty convinced he must have had CTE. You know, that kind of, you know, we've had suicides more recently that have been diagnosed with CTE. This is, in fact, you know, hovering over football, and it is absolutely fundamental to the game's survival to figure this out. You know, I played in an era, I bet Evan was in at the same time when you played, a concussion was thought to be a bruise that healed like every other bruise, no big deal. You know, you might be dizzy or whatever for a few days, but once your symptoms were gone, you were fine. And now we know that that's not the case. So we got to figure this out. And while we're trying to figure it out, keeping players from playing after concussions, going through the protocols, this is absolutely crucial. You know, at the college level, they're not even getting the millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars the NFL guys are getting. You know, they're doing it for other reasons, some of them hoping to get those millions of dollars someday. But, you know, universities, you know, are in the business of, you know, developing students' brains, not destroying them. You know, so universities have a particular need to try to solve this. And whether we will be able to solve it, I frankly don't know, because we're still waiting for enough definitive medical research to tell us, you know, what causes it, how likely it is, what the long-term consequences are most likely, you know, what percentage of players. I mean, all these things we don't know yet. But it's a kind of a dark cloud over football today that definitely was not there when I played.
I feel like there's, you know, there's been studies on both ends, both pro and con, to, you know, whether it does – contribute to brain injury. Mm-hmm. There's new studies that have come out that say the game of football is safe, but certainly you're seeing numbers at the youth levels decreasing over the past 3 to 5 years. More and more youth programs moving to flag, moving to non-contact. And I'm in the same boat. I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but certainly is an aspect that needs to be resolved, that hopefully there can be, the helmet with the technology that there is now, in creating a safer game, whether that is updating padding, updating the helmet, reteaching how to tackle. I mean, I think there's a lot of different aspects that go into it, but certainly, I think we're kind of at a crux right now from the top down, from the NFL down to youth sports on what is the next play going to be.
Yeah, and the we that's really struggling with this right now, I think, are the parents, young parents, mm-hmm. perhaps yourself, with some, now I have two sons, but they're 37 and 33 years old, so I don't have to worry about this. If I were a parent of young kids today, the best wisdom I'm hearing out there from what I read is don't let your kid play tackle football till he's 14. Let him play flag until then. If he still wants to play, then 14 is not, his brain's not fully developed, but it's much more developed than, those little tykes, with, bobblehead, wobbling heads on skinny necks sort of thing. So that has to be figured out. And helmets do a terrific job of preventing skull fractures, which is what they were designed to do. But the problem with the brain is it's in that skull and it sloshes mm-hmm. around right, inside. Right. So whether or not helmet technology can, how much new helmet technology can do is uncertain at this point. The better the helmets are, the more invulnerable you think you are as a football player. And so you use it as a weapon. And guess what? You're the beneficiary of the dangers that come from that. So when I was in high school, I played for an old school coach and we blocked and tackled with our shoulders. Mm-hmm. I learned how to block with my head when I got to college, and then the NFL. But, going back, we're trying to do that. We being, like from Roger Goodell on down, trying to take the head out of football to the extent possible. But whether full-blown concussions are more dangerous than this, just the repetitive subconcussive blows, that an offensive lineman will get 1,000, 1,500 over the course of the season, I don't know how you take those out mm-hmm. of the game. So, yeah, it's, like you said, a lot of uncertainty right now.
And, it's a contact sport. When you turn on the game today, you're going to see an offensive line and a defensive line that are very physical. Mm-hmm. So before we let you go, talk to us just a little bit about today. You've got Notre Dame, you've got Wake Forest coming into town. To finish out this schedule, Notre Dame plays Wake Forest, Miami, Navy, and Stanford, has the opportunity to run the table and potentially be in the college football playoffs. What are you expecting from today's game for the Irish?
Well, there's always the possibility, that after you have a game against a ranked team, you get an unranked team and you might let down. I don't see them letting down. You guys know today's team so much better than I do. But from what I've seen, these are a dedicated, serious group of guys that aren't going to let this possibility slip away from them. That Georgia game in retrospect is just, a deep misfortune, and they're not going to want to have that happen again. And for Notre Dame to run the table and get to the playoffs again is not only good for Notre Dame, but it's good for college football, because what Notre Dame, to me, as a former player and now as a fan, Notre Dame has to always be the team that does it right, that really has student athletes and takes care of them as students as well as athletes. And so for them to be successful against programs that, don't maintain such high standards is, like I say, good for Notre Dame and good for college football.
Well, Mike, we appreciate you taking some time today. Enjoy the game this afternoon, and go Irish.
Good. Thank you. Yes,
well, you're listening to the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. When we come back, we'll continue to come down and kick off on your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT.
This is former tight end Robin Weber. My job was to catch footballs. Yours is to catch every Notre Dame game right here on your home for Fighting Irish Football, WSBT.
The Game Day Show is also brought to you by Kurt Outdoor Living, LKQ Pick Your Part, and Zolman's Tire and Otto.
That was a great guest talking with Mike and stuff. You know, we blow through so much in 12 minutes, whatever. It goes so fast and everything.
He just, well, especially with his resume.
Yeah, so the whole time he's sitting there with something in the bag, so he showed me afterwards, and I want to mention he just came out with his eighth book. It's called The Art of
Book.
Eighth book. Yeah. The Art of Football. I'm not sure. Do we read that many books, or how do we?
He writes them, man. Yeah, that. I mean, I didn't know where to start on what to ask him. His resume was so impressive.
I know. The Art of Football, and you can get that at Amazon.com. Yeah, I mean, everything that he does. I mean, he's really the. Not to take anything from Rudy, but that's a real Rudy story, going from a walk-on to a team captain.
We can take it away from him.
I told him, I said, we should take it away.
They should have made a movie about him.
He goes, my life is so boring.
What?
I know.
Sounds pretty interesting. I mean, he writes books, but I think it's pretty cool. We had the captain from 1969 that was a center, and now we have a center from the 2012 team, Braxton Cave. Braxton, what's up?
Not much.
I see we have a couple of guests here with you, too.
Yes, this is my wife, Natalie, and my daughter, Aviana.
Aviana, do you want to say hi to your best friend, Lucy, at home right now?
What do you think?
I love that name.
She's stone-faced right now. But, yeah, and Aviana and Evan's daughter, Lucy, are our two best friends right now. So
it's been pretty funny. After Aviana leaves, Lucy tries to mimic everything that she does.
It's crazy. She a couple weeks ago started crawling, so our life has changed forever now.
When does she start working out at Sharply Training?
Hey, as soon as possible. I think this Christmas we'll get her first set of golf clubs.
So is that going. Something you've taken up since football?
I've been playing golf since I was about 8 years old.
Not a lot of time to play during football season.
No. I would wear it out during the summers, but, yeah, it's been my way of continuing my competitive drive since I've stopped playing football. So
how far can you hit it? Because you're a pretty strong guy.
You know, I don't think size matters. Have you seen these guys on tour? You know, you look at guys like Rory, and that mean they're small guys.
Yeah.
But they hit it a mile. So
right.
Nowhere near that.
Well, Braxton, you talked about, you know, staying competitive after football. Just bring us kind of up to date. You're back in the area now. What have you been up to? And then we'll talk a little Irish football, too.
So back in the area, my wife and I, we just bought a house in Osceola, Indiana. So we're not too far from campus. I'm working out of Goshen, Indiana, running ops for a company called Lippert Components in the RV industry. So you want to talk about competitive. It's super competitive industry, and it's booming right now. So it keeps me extremely busy. And you know, there's that competitive side there, but – nothing like running out on a field in front of 85.
Well, you've been doing a little recruiting for Lippert, too. You brought a former teammate in, is that correct?
Yeah, so what has it been, about a month now? Trevor Robinson, who played guard next to me on the O-line, did a little bit of recruiting. He decided he had twin boys, decided to hang them up, and I got him back here in town.
So within the next 10 years, you're going to have the entire offensive line working at Lippert?
I'm trying.
Hey, we'll have a lot of built-in guests for our show.
All right.
Yeah. You know, Chris Watt's on the market now, so going after him now.
Well, let's talk about this Notre Dame football team. We were talking with Mike previous, and then Lee Becton was on earlier. Mm-hmm. Lee was a running back, and then we have Mike, who's a center. And, you know, the identity that Notre Dame has kind of crafted so far this year that I think has been the biggest change in my mind, you know, even just looking back to last season, was a team that is going to win at the point of attack, that's mm-hmm. going to force the ball down your throat running, and is going to play, you know, tough defense, really going to get off the field on third downs and create turnovers. But specifically talk about this offensive line. You know, you've got the names of Mike McGlinchey, and I'm still putting my name in the hat for Quentin Nelson for the Heisman this year. You've got guys with a lot of experience, and you've got a couple of young guys in Robert Hainsey and Tommy Kramer at the right tackle position. Right. What have you seen from this group so far this year that has you really fired up?
You know, what's awesome about it is they remind me so much of our 2012 team. This O-line, it's a, you know, you look at McGlinchey and Q, and you look at Zach Martin and Chris Watt on the left side. There's a lot of similar aspects to this line from 2012. So a gritty group, and, you know, when you've got those young guys on the side, on the right side, having the guys on the left to bring them up to that standard, you know, they got a good thing going on. If you just – I solely watch just the O-line. I can't help it but to just watch that, and to watch these guys play is fun.
Harry Hiestand has a reputation for being a technician, mm-hmm. and will, you know, replay the same play over and over for an hour.
Yes.
When you're watching the game, is that still ingrained? And talk a little about Coach Hiestand and his approach in developing these great players. I mean, there's multiple guys in the NFL. You're one of those guys too. You know, it seems like everywhere you look, you know, off of the offensive line since he's been here, he's producing pro players.
Right. You know, we go into a film session with 75, 80 plays to watch, and we'd get through 10 in 2 hours. So, you know, I'll battle against anybody and say he's the best O-line coach in the nation. And, you know, the guys he's putting out proves that. But, yeah, the technical side of it and then the mental side of it of just being tougher than the guy across from you, that's his big thing, and it goes a long way.
This is WSBT's Game Day. We're talking with 48 career Irish gamer, Center Braxton Cave. Hey, Mike Oriar just brought something up I really hadn't thought about, so maybe get a little technical. He was talking about how he thinks he contributed to Joe Theismann's left hand being crinkled up because he snapped it so hard. How is that? Because you had different quarterbacks come into different games. How difficult is that for a center? Because I'm sure you get a certain rapport, but do some like it, you know, hiked harder than others, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
Evan talks about soft hands or whatever, so we know he had soft hands.
You know, that's one of the differences when you look at from when he played till now. We were under center more than usual when I was here, but it's so much spread shotgun stuff now that you don't really have an opportunity to crinkle any hands. So, yeah, it's the game's changed, you know, a ton. The dynamic of what we're doing on offense is different, but there's nothing like getting under center and doing a little ground and pound.
Braxton, you look at this team this year, they've been dominant in the third and fourth quarter. You know, part of that has to do with going in at halftime and making some adjustments. But really by then, you know, the game plan has been in place. You're going to tweak a few things here and there. But the strength and conditioning program has gotten a lot of kudos here.
Right.
Before the season, but even more so now when fans have seen what this team is doing in the third and fourth quarter. Matt Bayless has come in and done a great job. Dave Ballou, he came from IMG.
Right.
In tracking a lot of the data and whatnot. Jake Flint's handling the GPS side. David Grimes is still there, a teammate of mine and yours. And looking at that aspect right there, and I'm not necessarily asking to compare and contrast, but what have you seen in this short time? Granted, it's only been since, you know, early this year, January, mm-hmm. February, that this has been in place.
Right.
But and maybe even what is the feel from some of the offensive line guys that you've talked to now as far as what they're doing that has, you know, led to some of this dominance late in the game versus a fall-off in the right. third and fourth quarter?
So, you know, I'll be the first to admit I'm a huge long go guy. That was my guy when I was here. And, you know, I think what you can take from that is you look at the jump we made from when he took over from Ruben Mendoza. I think it was just that switch up, you know, changing it. It's a different mentality. We made huge strides when Longo took over, you know, and then guys, you know, build up a tolerance to it. So now bring in the new guy and, you know, he switched it up. He's pushed them to do some different things. And you've seen the jump they've taken this year. You know, it's, you know, you're in the strength conditioning world and you know that if you're not changing it up, you're falling behind. So, you know, I don't think it's anything against what they were doing before, but the change has been huge to help them out.
Well, big game this afternoon. Notre Dame kicks off at 3:30 against Wake Forest. They played two ranked opponents in USC and NC State. I think the word that's usually or the descriptor that's usually thrown around here is a trap game. Mm-hmm. You can kind of feel, you know, it's a different feel on campus. There's not maybe the same buzz. I'm sure as a coach, you know, the coach speak, it was in full effect this week, but as a 18, 19, 20-year-old college athlete, how do you manage not having a letdown? Now, it shouldn't be hard.
Right.
You've got a single elimination tournament game every weekend,
yep.
But what's going through the player's mind right now as they prepare for this game?
I think that's the biggest part. You know, playing at a school, independent conference, you know every game you got to play it like it's your last. So I think Coach Kelly does a good job of relaying that message. And, you know, these guys know they got to come in and do what they got to do, regardless of who they're playing each week. So they've been an exciting bunch to watch. I wanted to throw this out here to make sure I got it in before it gets over, but the secondary has been unbelievable to watch this year. The biggest change that I've seen in this team, and it makes it really fun to watch.
Before we let go of Notre Dame 2012 BCAA playoff center, Braxton Cave, you want to give a shout-out to your Penn High School winning the sectional last
night? Yeah, hey, that was a big one. My folks were asking me if we were going to go out to the game last night. I said, I think they'll handle this one okay, so we'll look at next week.
Another big win. I don't even know who do they go. Do you guys know where they go from
Crown
there?
Point.
Crown Point.
Crown Point. Crown Should point. Keep it rolling. Yeah. Right. Well, Braxton, quick prediction and a score if you don't mind.
Oof. I'm going to go with 42-0.
All right. Yeah, poor Lee. He gave him seven points. He gave him 0 points.
Pitching a shutout.
We'll take a goose egg.
Well, Braxton, we appreciate you taking some time. Have a great day. Stay warm, and I'm sure we'll see you around here in the near future. You're listening to the Game Day Show with Evan Sharpley. When we come back, we'll close things up. I'll give my keys to the game and a prediction.
And sweet potato pie.
Sweet potato pie. You're listening to 96.1 FM, 960 AM, WSBT.
This is two-time Notre Dame All-American Alan Pinkett. Now back to Game Day AM on WSBT. Go Irish!
Welcome back to the Game Day Show. I'm your host, Evan Sharpley, alongside State Farm agent, my producer, Tim Growl. To ensure everyone and everything, make sure you give Tim a call at 232-9981. We're joined now by Rob from Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue. Rob, what do we have out here right now?
We have rib tips, boneless, skinless chicken breasts, Italian sausage, and pulled pork.
And you brought a little snack to us too, which we're about to try. Can you paint a picture for our listeners right now while we eat this?
This is Fisher's famous sweet potato pie made by my wife.
Oh my goodness!
The recipe of my father. And so that's one of the many recipes and desserts that's offered at Fisher's Barbecue.
Evan, just you take the rest of the show, okay?
So I can't talk right now. Rob, keep talking. What else you got to talk about?
Tell about your location.
Where are you guys? Here, we got to keep eating this.
We're at a new location. We're at 3135 South 11th Street. It's in Niles.
Next to the Dairy Queen,
right? Next door to the State Line Dairy Queen, mm-hmm. Yes. And so the location is working out very well for us. We have a lot of seating. And so we can do parties, we can do different events at the new location.
Talk real quick about that, because I know when you show up here, before you even get to our show, you've already been out doing all sorts of catering events.
We do a lot of catering. We do weddings, we do company picnics, we do receptions. I have a wedding that I'm doing next weekend. We do a lot of tailgating events for the university. We cater for the stadium staff, for the administration building. And so we do a lot for the university, and so that's working out really well for us.
Great. Rob, we appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Food is great. I'm still eating this.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. We're going to get over there and eat some barbecue after we wrap up the show here.
All right, thank you.
All right,
guys.
Thank you.
If you're in the area, make sure you stop by Ivy Coordinate Suites, Fisher's Tips and Chips Barbecue.
I don't even want to get to the barbecue. Keys of the game. I just want to keep eating
the
this.
The key to a great game is to stop by here and get some rib tips, get some of the chicken. And then, I don't think there's going to be any of this pie left because I'm going to eat all of it.
Oh, I know. All right. We're going to give short keys to the game. We've got about 45 seconds.
In all seriousness, key number one is going to be to start fast. Try to match the intensity that Wake Forest brings in. And on the offensive side, it's going to be continuing with this identity of running the football. Feed Josh Adams the ball. Give it to him. 20-plus times again. I think the over-under we're setting at about 40 total rushes, which has been about on par, which will include Brandon Winbush, a couple other running backs. And then defensively, what can we expect? It's been the same every single week.
Right.
It's going to be getting off the field on third downs. It's going to be creating a turnover or two, and then that's going to lead to some type of points. Notre Dame's done a great job of creating pressures at the point of attack. I think that's going to continue. I like Notre Dame in this one. I don't have that 0 points, that goose egg up on the board.
Yeah,
but I'm
Braxton had 0 points. Lee had seven. Where are you at?
I'm at 34-20.
Ooh, no, they can't. Let's stay at 19 or something.
Okay,
34-19. Like all right. Thanks, partner. Hey, by the way, happy birthday, too.
Thank you.
Evan, I want to thank Mike, Lee, and Braxton for coming out today, and a thank you also to Matt Embry back in the studio and Jeremy on site here for helping make this show possible. Please listen this to WSBT for the Miami Game Time release because it hasn't been set yet. But we join Evan and I about 4.5 hours prior to kickoff. But listen this week, and the showtime will be set. We'll be getting ready for the hated Hurricanes. We'll be joined by the former voice of the Irish, Tony Roberts, and a player or two from the infamous Catholics versus Convicts game. Don't go anywhere as our Fighting Irish football coverage continues. Right after the news, it's Darren, Sean, and Eric previewing today's game on Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Immediately following them, it will be the official Notre Dame pregame show. Then it's the kickoff at 3:41 with Don Criqui and Alan Pinkett on the IMG Network. After the game, it's the official Notre Dame postgame show with Darren Pritchett, Reggie Brooks, and Lee Becton. All this on your home for Fighting Irish Football, 96.1 FM, WSBT. For Evan Sharpley, this is Tim Growl. Go Irish!
The home of Notre Dame football, the NFL, weekday sports beat, and JT in the morning, 960 AM, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend.